From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Iowa Democratic Party on Monday night had one task, which they spent months preparing for, carrying off the nation's first primary without a hitch. But on Monday night, as observers around the nation nervously watched for results to see if their favorite candidate would reign supreme, nothing was announced. Eventually, the delays were attributed to a software app that had not been adequately tested. As party officials said, they were checking the veracity of the results. The final results are expected late on Tuesday afternoon. My guest is John Bonifaz, the co-founder and president of Free Speech for People, co-author with Ron Fine of the book The Constitution Demands It, The Case for the Impeachment of Donald Trump. Welcome to the program, John.
Thank you, Sonali. And Ben Clements, our board chair, is also a co-author of that book.
That's right. Absolutely. And all three of you have been guests on our program, so it's great to have you back on our show. So this was, as many people have referred to it, an unmitigated disaster. What do you think happened if you're going to roll out a new app for a process that's already complicated? One would expect that app to be thoroughly tested for any and, you know, any possible eventualities. So what happened on Monday night?
Well, we're still learning the details of what happened on Monday night, but clearly the danger here of using an electronic method for reporting results shows why we need to have a paper backup. And in fact, there are hand-marked paper records in the Iowa caucuses that can be relied upon, and that's critical. But there are many states, unfortunately, that use electronic voting systems without any paper backup. And what this fiasco on Monday night in Iowa shows is that we have a serious crisis around election security in this country when we do not have these hand-marked paper backup records for demonstrating people's votes and their will. And you know, no election can be seen as free and fair if we cannot go about verifying the process and ensuring that the results are accurate. Our right to vote includes our right to have that vote properly counted. So it was a real danger sign with respect to the use of this mobile reporting app and its breakdown. And the only reason why the Iowa Democratic Party can ascertain the results is because it had that paper backup.
So you have the situation where you already have a very complicated process, you know, something like 1,700 spaces around the state, community centers, gyms, and school, you know, arenas where people were something on the order of 200,000 Iowans showed up on Monday night to make their choices known. And then you had these various forms of results, the first alignment, and then the second alignment, and the final alignment. What did the party do differently this year from last year?
Well, first they said they were going to announce the results from each one of those kinds of alignments, which is different than what they had done in the past, where they simply announced the results after all the alignments were made, after the 15% thresholds were made for specific candidates and the delegate count was considered. So they already were wanting to report much more information. On its face, there's nothing wrong with that. The problem is they also introduced this new app in the process. And there are reported problems throughout the state with the use of it. And, you know, the other thing I would highlight is, in addition to the paper backup that's been so critical for verifying the results in Iowa, we also have to see this as a danger signal for the use of online voting in any way whatsoever. Online voting by computer scientists has been roundly condemned as anything that can be seen as secure and reliable. And I think the use of this app and the breakdown demonstrates why, and why we should not be engaging in bringing in online voting in other states, where now states use that for bringing in overseas voters and military members of the military overseas. It's very, very dangerous to be going down this road of relying on the internet for casting our votes.
It seems as though conspiracy theories about Monday night's happenings abounded on both the left and the right. There was a report that you know, this was a factual report, not a conspiracy theory, but a report showing that the app was created by a tech firm that was run by veterans of Hillary Clinton's 2016 presidential campaign, as if to suggest that somehow these folks might want to skew the results in favor of, you know, Clinton's, you know, effective heir, Joe Biden. But we're talking about something that would have been many months in the making. There's also the right wing was engaged in a lot of conspiracy mongering, some of it in the same vein that somehow the Democratic Party was working actively to undermine Bernie Sanders like they did 4 years ago. Do you worry about the lack of trust? And as far as you can tell, is there any weight to any of these wild theories?
Well, I don't have any information about any weight to those theories, but what I will say is that when we do not have a process that can be verified, where we do not have any hand-marked paper ballots to back this up, those theories will gain further credence, unfortunately, and there will not be public confidence in the outcome. We must be able to verify our election results all across this country, including in a caucus in Iowa. In Iowa, they have those paper backups. They're able to verify the results, and that's what's so critical. But as I said, in many states, still, we are using voting systems without any paper backups, and that's where the public confidence further breaks down, and that's where these theories emerge. The other point I'd make here is that there is a private industry that's marketing these products, seeking to make a profit off of the way we vote, and they need to be fully transparent, and they need to be regulated, and scrutiny needs to be applied to them, and understanding who their investors are and how they're going about doing their business. And we don't have enough of that scrutiny and oversight right now. We have three major companies, ESNS, Hart InterCivic, and Dominion, that effectively control the market of voting systems in this country. And there's needs to be much more scrutiny from Congress, from the Election Assistance Commission, and from state governments with respect to these vendors and who their investors are and how they're marketing their products.
And, you know, the Trump administration wasted no time, and Trump's supporters wasted no time in asserting that the results were rigged. It really did the Democratic Party in Iowa really seem to have done itself a disservice. Now, one of the things that I want to talk about in reading the media coverage of the Iowa caucuses, the media were obsessed with who was taking advantage of the PR push, the sort of skewing of results from for primaries that the Iowa caucuses ends up influencing. So whoever wins the Iowa caucus or whoever's declared the winner gets that critical camera time, face time, which then goes on to supposedly help them in future primaries. All of this seems, if you step back, to really be anti-democratic. What do you think?
Well, I certainly think there's a serious problem when you have one state that is 90% white trying to effectively start the process on its own with respect to defining a primary election season. I think there's a problem there, and a number of candidates have spoken about how that lack of diversity in Iowa skews the conversation and does not provide the broader kind of debate we need to have in an election season. But what I also think is critical is that we understand that when we process the election results, that we trust them. And we can, with hand-marked paper ballots and paper records, as occurred in Iowa. But if Iowa didn't have that process, if they solely relied, as the vendor wanted them to, regarding this app, just on people making their choices online, then we would have a disaster times 10 in terms of what we saw on Monday night.
Pete Buttigieg went forward and started giving his speech. Amy Klobuchar took advantage of the fact that there were no results announced and, you know, tried to get some camera time. Senator Bernie Sanders addressed his supporters. Because that moment of being able to declare victory is considered crucial. And many suggested that the real winner from the Iowa caucuses was Joe Biden, who clearly seemed to be fourth in the entire group, you know, among the candidates who were the top four front runners. And the fact that there weren't actual results announced on this very, very critical night for media may work in Biden's favor, because it could have been disastrous for it to be announced that he came fourth. However, the media can control this narrative because they're the ones who are controlling the narrative. Just because the results might come out in a day or two, does it mean that all of a sudden there's going to be some momentum problem? I mean, the New Hampshire primary, which is the next one, is next week. There is still time for the winner or the loser or whatever from these caucuses, you know, for that news coverage to take hold and for people to start thinking about their choices.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, we're a nonpartisan organization, so we don't get involved in discussing specific campaigns. But we have a long primary season to go with respect to the Democratic primary as well as the Republican primary. And Iowa has chosen to be first for a long time now. I think there are many who are raising the question based on what happened on Monday night, whether they're going to stay as the first state to have voting happen in a primary going forward. But you're right. There's a lot of time left in this primary season. And when those results are announced, I think that those who are declared, in the top three are going to seize on that momentum going into New Hampshire.
Does this debacle undermine Iowa's, you know, stature for the next presidential election?
I think there were already questions being raised, given the demographics of Iowa compared to the rest of the country.
And I should add, on that demographics issue, a lot of people have also said, aside from racial demographics, it is a very, it is a process that's unfriendly to disabled voters as well.
Well, right. And for people, frankly, who have young children, there's a photo that's being circulated on the internet of a young child who was sleeping on the floor of a gymnasium because his mother, you know, was there to participate in the caucus. This is a lengthy process in the evening that doesn't really provide, you know, any real opportunity for those who have young children. Many will stay home. So it's not entirely democratic to have this process be the way in which voters are selecting their choices in a primary. There ought to be a fairer process where there's more access for all voters, regardless of what kind of time they have on their hands. For the same reasons, we don't want to have to ask voters to wait in line for hours on end in order to cast their vote. And yet that happens when machines break down, when we do not have reliable voting technology, when there are not enough voting places, when we don't have early voting. So we need to make it easier for people to cast their ballots and participate. And unfortunately, I think the Iowa caucuses are showing that they're not easy for everyone to participate.
Before we move to the next part of our conversation around the impeachment trial, I want to mention that the Sanders campaign did release internal data, polling data, which seems to suggest Sanders, according to partial counts, potentially being the winner of the Iowa caucuses and just a few points ahead of Buttigieg and potentially Biden and Klobuchar in a tie for fourth place with Elizabeth Warren in third place. We'll certainly see how that actually measures up to the actual results, even when they are released. Now, all of this is happening. You know, this week is sort of crazy. Monday, you have the Iowa caucuses. Tuesday, you have President Trump's State of the Union address. Wednesday is supposed to be the vote on whether or not to acquit President Trump. We've had you on to talk about the impeachment several times. Last Friday, senators voted to not have witness testimonies. And Monday, the House impeachment managers and Trump's defense team gave their closing arguments. On Tuesday, senators debated exactly, you know, what their position might or might not be on whether to acquit Trump. Overall, having seen this entire impeachment drama play out, how do you feel it went?
Well, first, I think it's important to make clear that what the House did was to issue charges against its president and to make him be the third president in our history to have been impeached. I think that was important. It was important for those charges to be issued. We still believe at Free Speech for People, along with our allies, that the House should advance new articles to cover Trump's other high crimes, including his cruel and unconstitutional imprisonment of children and their families at the southern border, including his obstruction of justice, his treating the Oval Office as a profit-making enterprise at the public expense in violation of the emoluments clauses of the Constitution, his racist abuses of power, his abuse of the pardon power. The list goes on. And those high crimes are just as worthy of impeachment as the high crimes associated with the Ukraine scandal. What's happened in the Senate is a complete sham. It's a sham trial. It's a massive cover-up. And those Republican senators who have voted to block witnesses, to block documents being produced for this trial, and just move on to a vote for acquittal, they will go down in history as being complicit with the president and this White House in this cover-up and complicit with the criminal enterprise operating out of the Oval Office.
Now, the impeachment itself, many feared would actually be a gift to Trump because he would, politically speaking, that is, because he would be able to show that he was being victimized here and the Democrats were going after him on a partisan basis. And polls have actually confirmed that this might be happening. Even in December, Trump's poll numbers were inching up. On Tuesday, Gallup released a poll showing that Trump had his highest approval rating so far during his entire presidential career, compared to, you know, other Gallup polls. And among Republicans, his approval rating is huge. Democrats as a whole, the Democratic Party's approval rating has gone down slightly, while the Republican Party's approval rating has gone up slightly. How do you explain this?
Well, first, I think we should say that, you know, members of Congress take an oath to protect and defend the Constitution. And on the House side, they had a responsibility, a constitutional duty, to issue these articles of impeachment. They couldn't look the other way in the face of these high crimes. They had to place country over party and defend the Constitution. And so I don't think this is about what the polls say ultimately. It's about what the Constitution demands. Having said that, I think what the impeachment process did is it educated the public more clearly as to how this president has abused his power, abused the public trust, defied the rule of law and the Constitution. And I don't think a snapshot right at the time of the impeachment trial will tell the full story in terms of where public opinion goes on this question. Members of the House did the right thing to issue articles of impeachment against this lawless president, and history will define this president as having been the third one to be impeached. And we will see in the coming months how that educational process impacted voters all across the country understanding the lawlessness coming out of the Oval Office.
I mean, yet it seems as though voters didn't have, I mean, if anything was clarified to voters, they seem to be backing Trump so far, at least. And certainly it remains to be seen. What really was shocking to me as this impeachment continued was how many of Trump's supporters, whether you're talking about lawyers like Alan Dershowitz or lawmakers like, you know, Lindsey Graham or Lamar Alexander, or for that matter, even Lisa Murkowski, a supposed moderate, justified Trump's actions. They finally were forced to admit that Trump did engage in wrongdoing because there was just so much overwhelming evidence, but then concluded, so what? That it was not the basis for impeachment and removal. If that's the case, have we now created a monster such that the president, whoever a future president is, has such a low bar for their conduct, for their ethical conduct, that they can essentially do anything? We've opened the door, it seems to me, to a monarchy.
Well, the precedent here is very dangerous. There's no question that the Senate had the duty to allow for a full and fair trial, to have witnesses and documents presented, and to vote to remove this president, convict and remove. And having not done that, I think we're seeing a very dangerous precedent set going forward. That being said, Congress still has a responsibility to continue this fight on the House side. They should immediately subpoena John Bolton, Mick Mulvaney, the other witnesses they sought to—
Right, they have held back from doing that. They've talked about it, but they haven't actually done it.
Well, they need to, now that the Senate trial is concluding, they need to do that. And they need to do it first and foremost because the evidence must come forward. The public has a right to know the underlying story here of the president's high crimes. And in fact, the Supreme Court will soon decide whether or not Don McGahn, the former White House counsel, will be forced to testify. Once that decision is issued, it will be very difficult for any John Bolton or any Mick Mulvaney to prevent any compliance with a lawfully issued subpoena by the House for them to testify. So I think they need to start that process right away and issue those subpoenas. They also need, as we have been saying, to advance new articles of impeachment on the other high crimes. And they need to open up a standing committee of the Congress, a new select committee, to address the direct threats this president poses to free and fair elections in November 2020 in real time, to address those threats through legislative and investigative means so that we, the people, can defend our elections and our democracy at this critical moment in history.
What do you make of the fact that Trump on Tuesday becomes the second president in the history of the country to give a State of the Union address while in the midst of an impeachment trial?
I think it's surreal. I think the fact is that this president has no business being in the Oval Office. He's completely unfit. He's demonstrated that he will repeatedly abuse his power. And I applaud members of Congress like Congressman Al Green, who was the first to press for impeachment in the House of Representatives, who has issued a statement that he will not be attending the State of the Union because of the lawlessness of this president. And I know other members of Congress are doing the same. But this president does not deserve any respect whatsoever for the behavior he has engaged in the Oval Office, the misconduct that he has engaged in. And I think the State of the Union address before these members is, in fact, misguided. I don't think he should be engaged in making a State of the Union at this time. I think he should be facing a conviction and removal from office.
Well, John, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I will certainly see how this all ends up on Wednesday.
Thank you so much, Sonali.
John Bonifaz is the co-founder and president of Free Speech for People, co-author with Ron Fine and Ben Clements of The Constitution Demands That, the Case for the Impeachment of Donald Trump. We've been discussing the Iowa caucuses and the Senate impeachment trial that looks like it will wrap up on Wednesday. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and now Spotify.